everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Thelman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today because I have another fantastic conversation in store for you. This program is all about empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And it really is about getting educated. There's so much information floating around out there, and some of it is very valid, and some of it is not so valid, and some of it is actually downright wrong. And we need to get the knowledge that allows us to make the discernment so we can truly choose the things that are going to support us. And that's what we're all about here. For those of you joining me for the first time, I want to welcome you. Thank you for tuning in and hope you'll be joining me every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, or at least listen to the archive shows, which I send out every week. In fact, if you want to be sure to catch this show, I suggest going to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com. Opt in there. Not only will I send these archive shows out every week, but you also will receive some free special reports, which I know you really will enjoy. And you can also go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, because I post these shows there as well. So you'll never have to miss any of these important conversations, and I hope you'll be joining me there. I also post lots of great information just to keep you up to date with the leading edge of what's going on in the world of health and well-being. Well, having said all that, let's just jump right into my conversation today. We're going to be talking about a topic that's making the news a lot. You probably have been reading it in newspapers, on television, radio. Everyone seems to be talking about the role of probiotics and the importance of a healthy microbiome. So today we're going to be delving into the world of probiotics and how they are a key to healing with my guest today, Jeff Thurston. And I wanted to share a little bit about Jeff, such an amazingly knowledgeable person about the probiotic world. He has his degree in biology and chemistry from Bernidji University in Minnesota. After working in microbiology research, Jeff went into sales. And in 2002, after meeting his partner while doing organic agriculture, they formed the company Master Supplements. And Master Supplements has grown to be a very respected company because science is the basis of the products. And I want to also just put it right out there is that in the exploration of finding the best probiotics for myself and my patients, I have been working with the Master Supplements products for many, many years now because I have found this company to be so excellent at what they do. And they have the science and they have the patents and the studies to back it all up. So that's why I am very grateful to Jeff and to Master Supplements for doing the fantastic work. And we'll talk about why I like their products and why I think they are a top of the line of probiotic products out there on the shelves and a whole lot more. So first of all, let me welcome Jeff Thurston to the show today. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Cheryl. How are you?
I'm great. I actually just came back from Costa Rica. I have been there for 2 weeks. I was there an extra week because, thanks to Hurricane Harvey, I had to wait a week before I could fly out. So I'm truly well-rested and tan and fit and had amazing transformational time there, which I will fill my listeners into the journeys there in the near future. But, yeah, it's great being back here, and I've been looking forward to our conversation, Jeff, because you always have so much great information to share. So thanks for being with us today.
Well, you know, you had your weather woes. I was in San Francisco on the hottest day that it's ever been. So that's a very unique experience being in a city at 107 degrees.
Oh, my God. It was 107 degrees in San Francisco. Unbelievable. Oh, my God.
We thought we'd go over there to cool off for a day because I was actually visiting a brother in Livermore.
Oh, my God, you must have seen puddles of people melting.
They
in front
all
of
melted
you.
Out there.
How interesting. Yeah, well, we're experiencing some really interesting weather patterns right now. So everyone just has to stay calm. Just you know, we're going to get through this all. So,
the stress is probably one of the hardest things on your gut.
So that's a really interesting place where I think we can jump off into. Let's talk about stress and the gut. What's going on when we get under stress, and how does it impact our gut microbiome?
Well, you know, when you're stressed, you get into the, you know, almost fight or flight kind of a response in your gut. You've got, you know, cortisol, you've got, you know, adrenaline, you've got all these different biochemical processes that are going on, you know, and same thing happens when you get butterflies in your stomach, you know, you get all these things happening, and that just by nature is going to affect, you know, the microbiome in its entirety. And if you stay stressed, you know, bacteria generally 12 hours, 14 hours, they're completely, you know, completing a life cycle. Many of them. And so if you're stressed for a long period of time, you can see how the ones that would survive in that environment are going to proliferate, and the ones that don't do well in that environment are going to go away. There's only so much room down there. There's just X amount of space, and two things can't occupy the same space at the same time. So, and that's the way probiotics can work for you, as well as, you know, stressful situations or when you're, you know, taking antibiotics, it's just the opposite.
So I know there's been a lot of research on the impact of stress and how it alters the environment. You know, everything alters the environment of our inner ecosystem, doesn't it? I mean, the seasons alter the environment, the foods we eat alter the environment of what grows within, you know, what the microbiome, those microorganisms that live and thrive and keep us alive are impacted by just about everything.
Oh yeah, clearly. You know, lately the readings that I've been doing more have been talking about our second brain, which is your gut, and the vagus nerve is the 10th cranial nerve, and that's the one that is the communicator between your gut and your brain. And believe it or not, there are more neurons in your gut than there are in your brain, and there are more signals going from your gut to your brain than from your brain to your gut. And so you can see how, you know, when you get stressed, how, you know, it affects you mentally, how it affects you physically, how it affects your microbiome. Everything's just tied together. It's a miraculous system that Mother Nature has devised. And the thing that we need to do, the primary thing we need to do, is eat healthy foods. You know, that's the best thing you can do for your microbiome.
So, you know, we are learning a lot about the microbiome, what goes on inside in our intestinal tract. Maybe you can take us on a little tour of the life of a microbiome, the life of those microorganisms, what goes on when we eat, you know, when we are eating and ingesting food, and how that food impacts the growth of the microbiome and where they live and who lives where. I think that could be a really great way to help people understand our conversation today.
Okay, well, the microbiome begins. Well, the microbiome is all the bacteria on a human being, you know, whether it's in your armpits or on, you know, inside your colon. You know, or on the skin on the back of your hand, you know, that's part of the biology of the human being. But for the sake of, you know, what we're calling the microbiome being the digestive tract, that starts at your lips and goes all the way through to your rectum and everything in between. So when you eat good food, the first thing you need to do is chew it. You know, it makes a lot of sense. You grind it down into the smallest particles, and then saliva and the bacteria in your mouth start working on it immediately. And as you swallow it, it will enter your stomach, and now it runs into an environment with a pH, which is a measure of acidity, below 3. Some people are at 3. People who are taking proton pump inhibitors are at 4. But so you want your stomach to be around pH 3 to down to 1.6. So a lot of times you'll find that bacteria are destroyed when they get into that kind of an environment. there are some bacteria in the stomach that do survive in that environment, and they start working on the food. And enzymes start working on your food at the same time. So everything now is starting to get broken down into little smaller particles. Then it comes out, it's mixed with bile, which is an emulsifier, allows fat and water to mix. The food enters the small intestine, and the upper third of the small intestine, this starts to get more enzymes from the pancreas. And then after that, the pH starts to go back up, and now you have the real active part of the digestive tract as far as breaking food down and absorbing food. And that's the last half to third of the small intestine and the first third of the colon. That's where almost all your biological activity is going on. And that's where absorption is taking place. And then after it's been worked on by the bacteria and the enzymes and the nutrients have been absorbed, water is removed in the colon and it's just compacted and it leaves your body as a stool. And that's a general trip down the lane. Now, to get more specific, we can certainly do that, but the role of enzymes and probiotics is what I would like to most talk about because those are the things that we have some control over.
Okay. Before we go there, something you said just prompted a question. When people take proton pump inhibitors or those acid blockers, which is primarily misdiagnosed and improperly prescribed, as I have seen in my practice, most people really don't have high acidity, but impaired enzyme production. However, if people are taking these proton pump inhibitors, do they, which is right in the stomach, affecting the stomach, are they having an impact on your probiotics and the let's just make the distinction on the microbiome?
The stomach at a 3 to 1.6 is where pepsin is active. You know, pepsin is not very active at a pH of 4. So when you're eating protein starts to break down in your stomach. Pepsin is the first thing that works on the protein. It breaks it down into smaller particles, then it comes out of the stomach, and then trypsin and chymotrypsin from your pancreas then start to break it down into smaller parts and amino acids. So if you're not breaking it down in the stomach because the pH isn't low enough or correct, then the trypsin, the chymotrypsin can't work, and eventually what will happen is you'll start getting undigested food all the way into your colon. And then when you have that, you've got a different set of microbes that are going to start working on it. And in general, I would describe them as putrefactive anaerobic bacteria. And it sounds not so good, and it probably isn't so good because the waste products are going to be a little bit different, more difficult to handle and excrete. So, for people who are having issues, you know, your doctor is going to give you your best advice, but, you know, my first question to the doctor is, what is the plan to get me away from them? You know, so that's me.
Yeah.
But that's,
and, I mean, there's such popular drugs now, and people take them for years and years, so there is so little warnings about them by doctors who prescribe them, and people don't really understand how it's altering so many key functions in the body, like you said, impairing the breakdown of proteins. People are more prone to have B12 deficiencies, osteoporosis. They just can't access the benefits of all the proteins. And then it's creating all this putrefaction in the colon, which is not a really good thing to be happening. You can create a lot of chronic conditions when you have this imbalance and dysfunction going on.
Right. It's a good system than when it works.
Right.
And when it's not working, then it's very difficult to find out what you need to do to correct it because we need to find the cause.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, just taking an antacid when your stomach is grumbling doesn't necessarily, you know, I mean, yeah, it can help that one or two times that it happens because you ate something that wasn't sitting well with you. But if it's happening frequently, you need to find out why.
Exactly. So let's move on. Let's talk about the role of enzymes and probiotics for our health. And, I have a question right off the bat. I've been doing some research for our interview, and I saw some studies that claim that probiotics have no benefit for healthy people. I don't know who's healthy, by the way, these days. I don't know how they define a healthy person. I think they're really hard to find. But that was what one of the studies claimed. So can we start there?
Yeah, this is always a difficult thing for me to grasp, you know, because you've got one group of people who are saying that probiotics can help you. You've got another group of people saying that they possibly can't, because in many cases there's not a lot of detailed research on not well people. And part of that issue is because if you're a dietary supplement, you're not allowed to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. So you can't be really working with diseased people, or you're inferring or that you're a drug. So, you know, we're kind of in a little box in that we can do studies on healthy people and we can kind of see results like that. We're not so restricted in that regard in other countries in the world. And just recently there was a large study, many thousands of babies. Sepsis is a killer of babies in many parts of the world, and taking a probiotic cut the loss of babies due to sepsis in half. So to say that it doesn't have any impact, ask those half of those babies that survived, you know. It's
right.
But that was elsewhere in the world. And here, you know, there are a lot of people who have GI issues. They take a probiotic and the GI issues disappear. It can be many different things. The diet could have changed. The probiotics can be the root cause of it. But when we're born, when a baby is born vaginally, the bacteria on the skin primarily are lactobacilli. And when a baby is born by C-section, there are very small percentage of the bacteria on their skin is lactobacilli. And lactobacillus is one of the genera of bacteria that are in probiotics. So if the first thing a baby gets is lactobacillus, taking a lactobacillus seems to me something that would make sense and, you know, follow through. You know, if you take it and that's the first thing a baby gets, then that's fine. And then bifidobacteria babies get from breast milk when they're nursing. So, and that's the other primary, you know, genus of probiotic bacteria. So are they good for you? I would say so. Mother Nature gives them to us before we're 6 months old, in a very natural way. So I fall into that category, that they can be of benefit. Now, if you're talking about a disease state, no, they're not allowed to be by definition from the FDA. So I will say that that guy is absolutely right in that article, that we can't say that they are of any benefit to human health.
Right. You know, I was one of those babies that was bottle fed. So, you know, you think back and what we know now and what happened back at that period of time, and there's still many babies being bottle fed. But obviously we missed out on helping to cultivate a healthy microbiome. And I know as a kid I suffered from all sorts of health issues and skin issues, which I'm sure was related to the fact that I never got colonized properly.
Who knows? I mean, there's, you know, it can be the environment. It could be that. You know, I'm not going to get into that kind of a discussion because, again, I'm not really allowed to, because that's a disease state. That
all right. Okay. All right. So let's go back to the role of enzymes and probiotics in helping to create a well-functioning environment in our intestinal tract for our health.
Okay, well, I'm going to add one other ingredient to that list of two things and probiotics and enzymes, and that's fiber. Because, you know, we all know how much we're supposed to eat fiber, but fiber by itself doesn't do us any good. Fiber is the food for the bacteria. That's why I'm going to add that. Now, probiotics, you know, there are more bacteria in your gut than there are cells in your body. 10 times more, 100 times more. there's far more DNA from those bacteria in your gut than your all the genes that you have in your body. So they're important in that regard. And to take 30 billion CFU of a probiotic going up against several trillion organisms, it's like sending a baby to fight an army. How effective can they be? But when you have a riot, you don't send in more policemen than there are rioters. You send in enough police to get things back to normal. And that's what probiotics do. We all have what I like to call a probiotic fingerprint. To put it very bluntly, we're all somewhat a function of what our mothers ate a week before we were born. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. if mom is eating a good, healthy diet, and babies are born face down for a reason. They get covered with fecal material, and they get the material from the vagina, and those are the bacteria they get, and their immune system is based upon those bacteria.
Yeah.
So those are the ones that your body first starts to learn, these are okay. And so you start getting your basis of your immune system right then and there. So yours are different than every other human being on the planet for the most part. Same genera, but a little different ratios here and there. But that's your probiotic fingerprint. And probiotic bacteria just want to get you back to normal. We always strive to get back to our normal. And that to me is what the role of probiotics is, just to help things get back to that place where your body is healthy and happy. Enzymes, on the other hand, they're proteins, and they have a specific task. There's a chemical bond that they break, and they're very unique. They're kind of like the key in your car. You can put it in, turn your car on, turn your car off, take the key out, put the key back in, turn the car on, turn the car off, take the key out, do it 1,000 times. You know, the enzymes just go in, they find that bond, they break it, they're released, they go look for that bond again, they find that bond, they break it, they're released, and they go. Eventually they're washed through the system, so they're not going to be quite like the key in your car, which is going to be indelible, but they have a function, and it's a very specific bond that they break. That's why there are different enzymes to break down sugars and fibers and carbohydrates and fats. And enzymes come from two sources. They come from animals or they come from plants. We've always gone the plant-based route. And I guess there are some philosophical reasons why we do that, but we did. And so all of ours are vegan. So you need to have in a good operating system, you need to have fat-digesting enzymes. The carb digesting enzymes, actually, a lot of that starts in your mouth, and with the saliva starts to break things down. You need protein digesting enzymes, and then you need fiber digesting enzymes. In fiber, there's two kinds of fiber. There's soluble fiber and there's insoluble fiber. So when you eat a carrot, you need to have enzymes to break them down to get to the soluble fiber, which is the food for the bacteria. The insoluble fiber is bulk in the stool. So, you need to have a good enzyme basis to break things down. Now, one of the things that destroys enzymes is heat. So a lot of times people are cooking their food, their vegetables, and they're cooking their fruits, and they're destroying the enzymes, and that's where we get them. So those people may need to supplement with some good, fiber-digesting enzymes. All the other enzyme groups are made in the human body. So they're there, and supplementing them is something that some people need, especially as we age. We lose probably, I've read 2-3% of our ability to produce enzymes every year. So if we're losing our ability to produce enzymes, we don't stop eating, so the food just doesn't get broken down quite as quickly, and so then you start having different kinds of issues. And it's amazing how much change can occur in people when they do take a good digestive enzyme. And the digestive enzyme needs to be balanced in that if the least expensive enzymes are carbohydrate digesting enzymes, they're cheap. And so you can put a lot of them in a product and make it look like there's a lot of ingredient in there. But what happens there is whatever you do, whatever meal you're eating, it increases the glycemic index of that meal because it converts all the carbohydrates to sugar very quickly. So you want to have a good balanced one, and the fat-digesting enzyme lipase is probably the most expensive. But that's the one that if you have it in there in a nice heavy dose, then you start to break down the fat, then all the other enzymes can find the sites and the bonds that they need to break, and they can move on. And the third part is the probiotics. There are two primary genera, Lactobacillus and Bifidobacteria. Lactobacillus generally are in the small intestine and Bifidobacteria in the colon. They're anaerobic and they don't like to have an oxygen environment. So there are many thousands of different organisms, but in the Acidophilus, Lactobacillus acidophilus, most people are familiar with that one. There might be 100 different strains, and they're not all the same. Some can adhere, some can break down fructose, some can break down lactose, some can inhibit certain pathogens, and others maybe inhibit a different group of pathogens. So they're very, very different. So we need to look at strain specificity in a probiotic. A lot of times you'll see a probiotic product that says proprietary blend of, and then it'll list all these different bacteria. Generally speaking, when you have that, you A, don't know how much of any one thing there is, and B, you don't know exactly which organisms are in there. Other ones maybe just will list, Lactobacillus acidophilus, 10 billion. Lactobacillus rhamnosus, 3 billion, whatever numbers there are. But without a strain, you don't know exactly which organism it is. So there's an awful lot of science that goes into choosing which probiotic organisms should be in a product. After that, we have some Bacillus coagulans, which is a spore-forming probiotic organism. And that one, the spore formers are really, you can't kill them with a hammer. They'll make it through the stomach with ease. So they're very popular, and they'll survive at room temperature. They're very popular. And then there's a Saccharomyces, which is a yeast that they classify as a probiotic. But in general, a probiotic is a lactic acid-producing bacterium. So those are the three different parts of things. And putting it all together, a good diet, good enzymes breaking things down, and probiotic bacteria to make sure that the lining of the small intestine and the colon is healthy to absorb nutrients and not be leaky allows our systems to work.
So what do these let me phrase it this way. How do these probiotic strains support our body's ability to recover from illnesses or to help us in our healing process?
Well, Lactobacillus acidophilus, the strain that we call LA1 in our product, has the ability to help your body produce inflammatory cytokines. So when you are challenged, whether it's some food gets into your bloodstream or some bacteria get into your system, your body needs to react to this is foreign material. It needs to protect you from it and get it out of your system. So inflammatory cytokines are the body's chemical messenger to get things moving, get things going to that site to start to take control of that. After they've completed their task and you start to get better, then you need anti-inflammatory cytokines to sort of calm things back down. Bifidobacterium, the BL04 that we call, is a one that helps your body produce interleukin-10, which is an anti-inflammatory cytokine. So that just that simple little part right there is one way that they help.
Now, I want to just stop there. This is a huge issue because most people are operating with a pro-inflammatory condition going on in their body. They're creating too much inflammation and they're causing aches and pains in their joints or their guts are inflamed. An inflammatory condition will generate all chronic illnesses, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, cancers. They're all generated by an overactive inflammatory condition in the body that's kind of out of control. So the gene you mentioned, IL-10, which we won't get into talking about in depth because I know it goes over people's head, but having worked with nutrigenomic testing in my practice, that's a very important gene that puts the brakes on inflammation. So it helps the body to get back into proper balance and reduce this inflammatory response so the body doesn't go, in a sense, haywire, generating damage from this chronic ongoing inflammation. So that just rang a bell when you said that, Jeff, because if we can increase this IL-10, this anti-inflammatory communicator in our body, we're doing amazing things for supporting our health and healing.
Yeah, I mean, and that's part of the role of probiotics is in steering, if you will. Again, the number of the small amount of bacteria that would happen to be in a product is not going to overwhelm the system. But taking enough and doing it frequently, you can start to see how that could have an impact on helping the body. But you need balance in life. You need the inflammatory response, you need the anti-inflammatory response. But those people that are that can benefit from more of the anti-inflammatory side, you can find a product that's just bifidobacteria. It's going to be more likely to be one that's going to help you with the anti-inflammatory cytokine production than one that is all acidophilus, for instance.
Yeah, so interesting. So let's talk a bit about soluble fiber and what that is specifically and why it's such important food to help these microbiome in our gut flourish.
Oh, this is one of my favorite subjects, believe it or not. let's talk about the different soluble fibers. Let's start with one that many people know. It's called FOS, FOS. That's fructooligosaccharides. It's a chain of sugars that's fairly small, has a low molecular weight, when I say that 1,000 to 1,500 Daltons, just use the 1,500 as a unit of measure. And the FOS can, if it's found in tomatoes and garlic and asparagus, and you take it, it's a natural form, and we like to say that there's some unidentified nutrient factors that go along with it. So, but if you take isolated FOS and you put it in there, some of us, and I'm one of them, this FOS can feed gas-producing bacteria, and I get in absolute pain if I have any FOS. It doesn't bother me at all, like I said, with garlic and asparagus and tomatoes, things of that sort. So that's one, and that's, again, an inexpensive thing, and they can throw it in a product and say we have a prebiotic in there. And that's what fibers are, prebiotics, food for probiotics. Then you move up a step, and you get into inulin, and now you're in the maybe 5,000 Dalton range. It's a little heavier, larger chains, and a little more specific for different bacteria. So, and sources of that are Jerusalem artichoke and chicory are probably the most common, well-known sources of it. And that's just a little bit more specific. And then you get into a much larger prebiotic fiber, soluble fiber. And one that I really like to talk about is called PHGG. Which stands for partially hydrolyzed guar gum. It comes from the guar plant in the Pacific and is digested down to about 20,000 Daltons. And it dissolves in crystal clear in water and has no grit and no taste. And what happens here is that when you take that, bifidobacteria counts will double in healthy people, mm-hmm. and butyrate levels go up. And those are both wonderful things, but there's a little process that goes on here. If we go into our lab and we take sugar out of the broth that you use to grow probiotic bacteria, and you substitute the partially hydrolyzed guar gum for the sugar, bifidobacteria won't grow. So we know that does not feed bifidobacteria. And we also know that bifidobacteria don't make butyrate. So how do we go from taking this fiber and getting increased bifidobacteria counts and getting increased butyrate?
Which we can define that. Can you define butyrate for my listeners?
Butyrate is what they're called short-chain fatty acids. There's lactate, acetate, propionate, and butyrate. Those are the four short-chain fatty acids. And they're very, well, butyrate in particular is very critical for the health of your colon. It's a food source for the colonocytes, which are the lining of the colon, which, you know, then allows for good blood flow and good colonic peristaltic activity and a lot of different things that are going on, but it is the primary food source for a good, healthy colon. So what happens when you eat the PHGG is a group of bacteria in your gut breaks it down into smaller parts. Those smaller parts now feed the bifidobacteria, so now your bifidobacteria counts go up. Then what happens is bifidobacteria make lactate. Lactate is converted to butyrate by other organisms, plus some strains of Clostridia and some strains of Eubacteria, for instance. They will then convert the lactate to butyrate. So here's a fiber that is creating this chain of activity that is making your colon healthy. And to me, it's just amazing how our systems function in that regard. But even more amazing is how we're starting to get a little tiny glimpse into what's going on down there through the science that's going on and the research that's going on.
So what you're saying is that there's a bigger system needed to help create a healthy microbiome environment. We need really good quality probiotics. We need to have a good quality enzymes, which have with a variety of the enzymes that are breaking down not just carbs and sugars, but particularly fats efficiently. And we also then need to bring in the proper and most effective form of soluble fiber, which is helping to generate all the components that support the health of the colon, which I think is really important. It's like a system. If we really
it
want
is.
To get the best results, we need to understand all the key components of that system.
Yeah, it's like anything, you know. Let's just say a car. A car doesn't run with just an engine, you know, and it doesn't run with just gasoline, and it doesn't run with just tires. You need to put it all together. But you take any one thing out of that system, and it doesn't work so well.
Right.
It actually can be harmful, you know.
Right, right. Yeah.
You've got to keep the whole thing working, you know, optimally.
So this is really important because people are very interested in probiotics. People are taking lots of probiotics, but they may not be getting the full benefit of those probiotics if those other key pieces are missing. And in most cases, I think they are missing for people.
Oh, a lot of it, you know. I mean, you see the was the Department of Agriculture puts out a list of the how much fiber you should eat, and I think it was 25 grams a day. A lot of other people are now pushing that up to 35 grams a day.
Mm-hmm.
We don't eat 25 grams, so if we're increasing the minimum, we're even falling shorter in what we're supposed to be getting to help keep our microbiome intact.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I'd like us to talk a bit about the master supplement products, which I find very fascinating, and what you have done in developing these products. I mean, Master Supplements focuses entirely on the world of probiotics and creating the types and the strains. And, you know, when you're talking about the specific strains, I got this image. It's like, well, probiotics are like the car, and then you get into the different types of, let's say, Lactobacillus, Planterum, or whatever, and that's like the model. That's like the brand, like, you know, Toyota, and then the strains are like the specific kind of Toyota you're getting. Would that be a good metaphor?
Yeah, that would be a very good metaphor, sure. There's
okay.
Automobiles, then there's cars, you know, I mean, automobiles, and then there's brands, and then there's models.
Right.
And it's the same thing with bacteria. For instance, we talk about Acidophilus. Well, let me back up half a step. In the United States and in other countries in the world, there are repositories for bacteria. So you find one, you can grow it, then they put it into liquid nitrogen and they store it. And every one is assigned a number, a very specific number. And that's so there is one, it's called the American Type Culture Collection. So from there, if you look at an organism, you can see lactobacillus, then you see acidophilus, then you'll see a strain designation. And very rarely do you find anybody give you then the American Type Culture Collection number for it. And it's somewhat important in that some organisms have been studied extensively, and they have a trade name, and that trademark belongs to a company. The bacterium does not, but the name does. So if you have a company that is growing probiotic bacteria, they grow it, and they sell it to me, and they sell it to somebody else, and somebody else owns the trade name for it. I can't call it that. But the one thing that doesn't change in there is the American Type Culture Collection number. Now, and I understand companies in their desire to do some research and get a return on their investment for that, that if they have a trademark, that they want to use that trademark in the published data that comes out. And so that people, when they want to go buy that organism, they go buy it from that company. I absolutely understand that whole process and the reasoning for it, and I have no problem with it. On the other hand, for a physician to, rotating probiotics is a very important thing to do. Like, we don't grow tomatoes in the same ground every year. We rotate our crops. You can rotate your bacteria. But if you don't know the names are the same, or the names are different, but the organism isn't the same, you're not really getting the benefit of a rotation. So one of the things that we've always done is, in our literature, we publish the American Type Culture Collection number along with the strain designation and everything else by bacterium, by product. So we understand the importance of that, and that's what we do. It doesn't mean that we're the most right and righteous company in the world. No, we're not, but that's just our philosophy. We also believe that we should publish the third-party lab tests on our product by lot number. So we do that online. Other companies don't do that. But, so we do what we do, and other companies do what they do, and either way is neither one's right, neither one's wrong. But that's one of the things that we try to say that we do that separates us from some of the other companies. Now, how do you handle probiotic bacteria? These are freeze-dried organisms. They're grown in big, giant fermenters. They're centrifuged, so they spin out the cells, then they rapidly freeze them, and then they dry them. So they're a dry powder. So what would you imagine is the most harmful thing to a freeze-dried organism? It's water.
Moisture. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to protect the bacteria from the time that they come out of the freeze dryer until they get into your small intestine, in essence. That's really what we're looking for. So what we do is we still use a glass bottle, simply because glass is far better at protecting the bacteria on the inside from the moisture that can happen, like on a 90-degree, 95% humidity day in Houston or Scranton, Pennsylvania. You get those really hot, humid days. Moisture is not so good. And ice is another thing that brings water into the environment. So with a glass bottle, we're protecting the bacteria. We also put a moisture absorption packet and an oxygen absorption packet inside the glass bottle to further protect them. And then we use a nitrogen flush, so there's no oxygen in the bottle. Then we use, inert wadding and double neck seals, so we keep the product very, very dry inside the packaging. And then we store it at minus 10. So the product is, when you get it, it comes out of our freezer, and within 2 days it's, on your doorstep. It's best if you keep it in the refrigerator. But some people have problems with compliance if it's in the refrigerator. They forget to take it. So leaving it out, you've got 30 to 45 days, opened at room temperature, just keep the lid on. And that's what those little packets do to help protect it, and they're still good for that period of time. So that's a second, that's how we protect it in packaging. We haven't even talked about now getting things through the stomach. I was looking at that literature, this was years ago, from one of the major yogurt companies, and they were talking about how thrilled they were to only lose 3 logarithms of activity of their bacterium going through the stomach acid. Well, 3 is a small number, isn't it? But that 3 is 3 zeros off the end. So if you go from 1,000 down to 1, that's 3 logarithms of loss, which means you've lost 99.9% going through the stomach acid.
Wow.
Probiotic that has no ability to protect the bacteria from the stomach acid, what are your chances of anything getting through and being effective? 0. I mean, just about 0. So we, so then you have that age-old argument, well, you should take it with food because the food is going to buffer it and you have better survivability. And then the other group, the other camp says, well, yeah, but when you eat food, you increase the stomach acid, which is going to make the stomach more acidic and you'll decrease survivability. So you should take it away from food. You know, I don't know if I could even begin to answer that question, but from our perspective, don't care when you take it, because we, inside each of our capsules, we have an ingredient, and this is our patent, sodium alginate. It comes from seaweed, and it has very unique property. At a pH below 3, it's converted to alginic acid. So when you swallow the capsule and the capsule starts to dissolve in the stomach, a shell starts to form in the stomach. It actually forms in the stomach by the conversion of sodium alginate to alginic acid. So this little shell forms and it protects the bacteria while it's in the stomach. Well, then it comes out of the stomach, and now the pH goes back up, and it goes back to sodium alginate. And the sodium alginate now has, it's a polysaccharide gel, and so the bacteria are sort of in their own little cocoon, waking up and getting delivered deep into the small intestine, and then bifidobacteria will make it on through into the colon. So that's one of the things that we do to get them through the stomach. And then because of our experience growing bacteria, we understand that in the broth that they use to grow probiotic bacteria, there's an ingredient called polysorbate 80. It sounds, you know, just like a chemical, and it is. It can come from a plant source or it can be manufactured, but it's an emulsifier. It allows fat and water to mix. It's in ice cream. It's in a lot of different foods that we eat. And it wakes up the bacteria. If you don't have it in there, the bacteria won't grow. It's that simple. They won't grow in the fermenter without polysorbate 80. Well, people didn't really want polysorbate 80 in their probiotics, so we found substitute, which is sunflower lecithin and oleic acid. So we put that in every capsule as well. And so what that does is it reconstitutes the cell membrane of these fragile, freeze-dried organisms that they can wake up, start taking nutrients in and putting out lactic acid, which is their lot in life. But they also produce some antibiotics like acidophilin, or some of them will produce hydrogen peroxide. There's a lot of different metabolites that come from these probiotic bacteria. But they need to wake up, and they need to wake up fairly quickly. So with our lactostim, we call it, stimulating lactobacillus, if we put that with almost any other probiotic, it'll produce more lactic acid in 12 hours than it does now. And why 12 hours? Anybody who has diarrhea, whatever they ate, in 12 hours it's gone. And if the bacteria didn't start waking up to produce anything, then how can they do a whole lot of good for the human? So we deliver them through the stomach, and then we wake them up. And then the next thing that we do is we spend an inordinate amount of time when we create a product looking at compatibility. I think everybody that's listening is probably familiar with putting 2 kids in a hot car on a long trip. They'll get there alive, may not be the greatest of journeys. Well, why do that with the probiotic bacteria that you're putting into into a capsule. So we look at, you know, are they all going to get along? Now, if you separate them by a few hours, they'll each get there. They'll find their spots that they're going to live, and off they go. But probiotic bacteria, for the most part, 4 to 6 weeks, they'll hang around. One strain I know that I saw was 8 weeks. But, they're transient. They're going to do their job and leave. And their primary job is to produce lactic acid, which creates an environment that a lot of pathogenic bacteria don't like. And so off they go. And so those are the things that we do that are different than other companies. And we use the same sodium alginate to deliver enzymes to the stomach. Fiber doesn't matter. But so there's that kind of science that we put into our products, and knowing the bacteria and which ones get along and get them through there and let them do their job when they get there.
So that's why I really love the products you've developed. I really trust what you're doing. I have to say that this is all that your company does. You know, it's not like other companies out there that bring in from whatever sources to add to their line. You only have probiotics and enzymes and then the best fiber products, which is your specialty, and that's what you've dedicated to. And from everything you've said, it's just so impressive how you have tried every way possible to ensure and enhance the efficacy of your strains and also how they're delivered, so people really do get results. And I know this is why so many practitioners use your products, because they see such fantastic results with their patients.
Yeah, I mean, our very, very, very first conference, we started in 2002, and in August of 2003, we went to AANP, American Association of Naturopathic Physicians, in Portland, Oregon. I remember it clearly because we made some of our very best friends. You know, in all walks of life, when you have a product, there are the early adopters, and then, you know, that will believe what you're saying and doing, and they'll try your product, and then they'll tell other people, and then those people will tell other people. So it's kind of a word of mouth. But we found, you know, a dozen or so of the early adopters at that conference, and they took our product and started using it. And to this day, you know, we've lost two of them over these years, but to this day, all the other ones are still customers, you know, of ours, because the products still work for them, you know. It's amazing how companies can grow too. If you have a good product, you know, you're going to have a shot at, you know, at surviving, you know. So we're still here for 15 years. Some other companies, they have a lot of money they can put into marketing, but they don't have the science. They're just copying what other people are doing. And they get much bigger than we are. But, you know, that's not our concern. Our concern is to continue to make, you know, top quality products and make them available to people as best we can, and go from there. You know, we do, you know, there's a lot of antibiotics being used in this United States. And if you just think about the two terms we're talking about here, antibiotic and probiotic, I think we can all see that they're, based on the anti and the pro, that they're opposites. And I liken, you know, with some antibiotics more than others. They're like taking the paint off a piece of wood. And if you don't put paint back on the wood, something bad is going to happen to the wood. And probiotics are really just putting paint back on the wood. You know, you and I can't occupy the same space at the same time. The same thing goes on for bacteria in your gut. So if you drive out some pathogen with an antibiotic and there's a void down there, what's going to fill that void? The single most opportunistic organism that's available. But if you take a probiotic, you're creating that a scenario where they can occupy that space and just hold on until reinforcements come from the body being healthy and going back to its normal. So that, to me, that's a significant thing in where probiotics really help the human body. You know, they're if you take antibiotics, you should take probiotics, and all you need to do is separate them by 2 to 3 hours. Three is better. So if you start on a dose of a regimen of antibiotics, After you take your first capsule, wait 3 hours, take a probiotic. Do it again and keep doing it. And then after you stop the antibiotic, stay on the probiotic for about 30 days. And at that point, you can decide whether or not you want to stay with probiotics and take them twice a week, three times a week, every day, whatever you want to do, or stop. You know, that becomes the choice of the patient. But for goodness sake, while you're taking an antibiotic, you should do the same thing. Now, alcohol, tobacco, birth control pills, steroids, stress, you know, you name it, there are many, many, many things that have the same impact on the gut as antibiotics. So taking a probiotic is another thing to just help keep things from getting out of hand.
So this has been such a great conversation. We've gone through our hour so quickly. And I want to thank you, Jeff, for your dedication for creating a company based on fantastic integrity and science, and for helping us to really understand the importance of probiotics and the distinctions and all the things that we need to do to create this healthy inner ecology environment with the use of the specific fibers, specific enzymes, and the best probiotic formulas. So I'd like people to go and check out what you're doing. It's the website is master-supplements.com. I think you'll find the science there, the information there, and will give you much more knowledge. And certainly I encourage you to take a high-quality probiotic. This is the product after all. Researching Master Supplements for all these years, that's the one that I have been using and have all my patients and family members on as well. So, Jeff Thurston, thank you so much for being with us today, for sharing all your knowledge and for the wonderful work you're doing. I am very grateful to you.
Well, thank you for having me on. I always enjoy chatting with you, and actually I hope to see you soon at one of the upcoming conferences this fall.
Oh, well, I'm sure we will meet up again as we do every year. So thanks again for spending this time with us, and thank you all for listening to my program, What Women Must Know. You've been having this great conversation about probiotics with Jeff Thurston, who is one of the founders of the company Master Supplements, and that website is master-supplements.com. And until next week, I just want to remind you to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.